guys, Matt Haycock here. How are you doing? It is the 29th of August, and it is my weekly roundup, the last one that will be recorded in France, the last one from the Sea Squirter for this year. I'll be flying back into England on the 3rd of September. So the next time we record this, it will be from England. First time I've been there since the beginning of this year. So that just gave me a few things to talk about with you guys as well. You'll also have to excuse any bumpiness, any sounds of hair dryers, any girls cackling in the background, because we are just sailing back to port where I'm going to be late for dinner. So multitasking and squeezing this in all at once. A couple of things before we get on to business. Obviously, like I say, I'm traveling back to England this week, and for those of you who follow me, you'll know. For those of you that don't, I've not been in England since I think the first week of January. I've not really been properly back in England since December of last year. I moved to Dubai, where I've been from kind of January until May, and been in France from May until now. My God, this is bumpy, isn't it? Been in France from May until now, I've always spent a lot of time out of the country, you know, on a holiday capacity, but never, you know, actually lived somewhere. You know, the last 9 months has been amazing. It's almost been like my first year at university, or what I would imagine a first year at university would be anyway. I think, you know, next year and the years going forward, I'm going to be a little bit more organised and committed to work. It's been a different world with Corona, I guess the semi lack of activity going on. So I've really been making the most of it, and it's kind of made me think. I've talked about this before with you guys, but a lot of the time I always get messages from people, particularly people I know, your friends, investors, people I do business with, who are always saying, oh, I'm so jealous of your lifestyle, or I wish I could be doing what you're doing. And always these people that are saying this are people who are in much more of a position than me. Not much more of a position, otherwise I guess I wouldn't be doing it, but let's say in as good a position, if not better than me, to be doing to be living where they want to live, or to be doing what they want to do. And it's a conversation I always have with them. But I just think it's something really important for everybody to think about, that, you know, how many of you guys listening to this, watching this, you know, are really happy in every aspect of what you do? Because my simplistic belief, it is completely not data backed, but just, you know, from my experiences and views of life, is that the majority of people are doing a job that they don't want to do, living in a place they don't want to live, being with a girlfriend or a boyfriend that they don't want to be with, and probably hanging out with people they don't want to hang out with either. And I can never get my head around why. And it's always a very easy comeback from people to say, oh, it's down to money. You know, if I had more money, I'd do this. But, you know, does money really make any difference to many of those things? You know, we talk about living abroad. If you have got more money, if you're successful, it will be much easier to maybe live in some of the places you want to live. But, you know, people who want to live somewhere sunny and do a job, why are they not doing that? You know, why are you not living in an English speaking country that hires UK people? You know, obviously I've been in Dubai, there's a massive amount of English people over there working in Dubai in internationally related jobs. You know, America's, Canada's, Spain's, even in places like France, you know, there's plenty of places that, you know, ultimately whatever your skill set, whatever your earning potential, whatever your price bracket is, you know, there are opportunities for you there. Kind of coupled with this, you know, just talking a bit of mindset as well. I've had a good friend of mine out here with me for the last week or so, and he has been. We've been in the gym together. You know, as usual, we talk about work together. And this guy, again, I'm always conscious on these videos that I try and redact as much as possible, but I would never say anything that I wouldn't happily say to someone's face, which is, you know, what I say to this guy as well. you know, we'll go to the gym, and rather than getting on with any workouts in the gym, he spends all his time pointing at everybody else, going, "Oh my God, look at that guy's body! I'll never be as fit as him, or I'll never do this, or you know, look at that guy's, you know, 100 million pound boat. I'll never have a boat like that." Now, I'm obviously not saying that any of these things are simple to attain or easy to attain. You know, if it was easy, we'd all be doing it. But with a mindset of, "I'll never be as fit as him, or I'll never have as much money as him, or I'll never live in that place, or I'll never do that place," you know, what possible chance has anyone got of achieving anything? Now, I'm not talking about being unrealistic or, you know, optimistic to the point of stupidity, but you've got to have a dream, you've got to have a vision, and you've got to have some, you know, you've got to have a belief in your plan that you're going to achieve. Now, listen, I'm not saying that we're all going to be, that you're going to go in the gym, we're all going to look like Mr. Universe. And I guess I'm probably reasonably well qualified to, you know, to talk about fitness, seeing as though I spend a good whack of time in the gym and never look much better. But you know, ultimately, I know that's down to the fact that I put more interest in my food and my drink than I do in my gym and my health and fitness. But I'll go and work out, I'll do the exercises, I'll put in the work, and I'll stay in some reasonable semblance of shape. But you know, I don't particularly have the motivation to eat super well, or to stay off the booze, or to cut out the carbs, and therefore, you know, I'm never going to achieve that top level of fitness. But you know, for anyone who wants to cut out bread, cut out chocolate, or go, you know, go and put an hour a day in the gym, you know, the transformation of that consistency is going to be leaps and bounds. But if you're going to sit in the gym and do fuck all and point at everybody else, say, "Oh, I'll never have a body like that," or you know, I'll never be able to lift, you know, as much weight as he is, and of course you're not going to be able to do it. And purely coincidentally, I was reading a book this afternoon, and there was a quote in there from Henry Ford, the car manufacturer, who was famous for saying back in his day, whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. And I thought, I knew I was going to be talking about this tonight. I thought, what a fortuitous timing to read that quote. I'll chuck it in there. So look, I know we've not talked about any particular biz of the week yet, but I just think, you know, from a mindset and a happiness perspective, you know, the last kind of 7 minutes is very important for everyone to kind of have a think and listen about. And you know, what is it you want to achieve? Have you got a plan in place to do so? Have you got a dream? Have you got a vision? And because I really believe that whatever it is you want to do, you know, can be achieved, can be attained to a good level of success. I'm not saying world class. Listen, obviously, you know, whether it's world class athletics, or you know, or the top 100 richest people in the world, or the most talented magician or actor or gardener or whatever it may be. Obviously, you know, at that level, you know, there is a, you know, a sprinkling of luck and many, many thousands and thousands and hours of practice and discipline. But you know, with a plan and a degree of discipline, I don't believe there is anything that can't be achieved by anyone at a modest level. So have a think about that. Are you living where you want to live? Are you doing the job you want to live? Are you going home to bed with the person you want to be doing it with? And if not, why not? Let's have a little talk about work. It's 7:45 when we're recording this. I've got about 10 minutes to squeeze some things in before I have to get off the boat. I've been talking to you guys a lot over the last few weeks about the gym business that I invested in recently, which is going to be open in about 3 weeks' time. So I'm looking forward to getting in there when I'm back in the UK. It's not been plain sailing, as never is in these situations, and we've been involved in some contractor disputes, which unfortunately have got very messy and have also gone legal now as well. Now, I think you guys may, anyone who watches these regularly, may remember that from the first one of these I recorded back in May, I talked in the first episode about how I had just settled a legal case that had been ongoing for about 2 years, where I ended up paying a substantial amount of money in that particular week, money that I, you know, morally didn't believe I owed, but you know, it was really the right thing to do, just to get it put to bed and move on and have the headspace back and back, get back on with my life. But obviously one of the things I was talking about was about the importance of being pragmatic, and that, you know, what might make you feel better isn't necessarily the best answer for business. And a similar situation like that's cropped up on this gym. You know, we've got into a dispute with a contractor. Without boring you with the details, work has been done to a substandard level. People have been involved appointing that contractor and managing that contractor, and effectively allowing that work to be done to a substandard level. And I've walked into the situation and inherited a mess. Now, unfortunately, this contractor is now no longer on the job. There's a bill outstanding, and you know, it's going to be probably a multiple months, if not years, dispute over who's right, who's wrong, and whether or not this contractor ever gets paid. In the meantime, this contractor has tried to issue a statutory demand against us for the unpaid invoice. Now, for those of you that don't know, a statutory demand is effectively a demand that's issued on a business prior to applying for a winding up petition, winding up proceedings. So it's part of the process that needs to be followed, part of the notice that needs to be given. Now, the thing is, with winding up petitions, obviously it's a very meaty, you know, and terminal event if one is won. So courts do not approve these lightly. And you know, for a debt to be able to go as far as a winding up petition, it has to be uncontested. Now, it's very easy, you know, it's very difficult to have a completely uncontested debt. Because, you know, so many times, you know, when somebody thinks they're owed money, like with most situations, you know, there's three sides to every story. You know, the debtor's version, the creditor's version, and probably what is somewhere between the two, the truth. Now, unfortunately, unless everything is black and white, and completely uncontested, it is not possible to successfully issue a winding up petition. This contractor tries to serve us with a statutory demand. We get back in touch with him initially without lawyers to say, listen, mate, what are you doing? This isn't going to work out for you, and this is going to run up a load of costs for us both. You know, we're already both in a mess here. Let's not make this any worse. He doesn't want to listen. We then write to him through our lawyers to say, you've got 48 hours to withdraw this statutory demand. Otherwise, we're going to have to apply for an injunction. Injunctions, by the very nature of the urgency of them, are very very expensive legal procedures. What would normally happen with any well-advised party or any sensible person is, you know, they will withdraw their action so as not to have to take this to court. We gave this guy 48 hours, I think it was, to withdraw. 7 days later, he still hasn't withdrawn, and our lawyers wanted to instruct barristers to then go for the injunction. This was going to be probably a 10 grand exercise, an exercise where ultimately we would get our costs back. If we were successful, and honestly, you know, having had so much experience of this to date, I really knew that, or not knew, but let's say, I really believed that we had a 99.9% chance of winning. So I was never afraid to go to court over it, but I didn't need the grief. I didn't want to have to outlay the cash. And also, to be honest, I felt semi-bad for this contractor, who I don't believe is fully at fault. So I ring him up, really almost as a man-to-man courtesy, to say, listen, buddy, this is a shit situation for us both. We've both lost money. We're both in a mess. Let's not make this any worse for the pair of us. I guarantee you're going to lose. Withdraw your petition, and we'll deal with this via arbitration or discussion or whatever we're going to do in the future. But I guarantee you are going to lose if we go to court with the statutory demand. he doesn't want to listen. We go to court. We didn't quite get as far as court because by the time he got his barrister and lawyer involved, they also knew he was going to lose and advise him, and we had to settle probably an hour before we were due in court. By that point, there was something like 15 grand on the clock with the lawyers. He ends up having to pay us about 12. We lost about 3. And as I knew it would be from the outset, it was just a shit situation for us both, making the situation even worse. So I'm now 3 grand out of bed. He's 12 grand out of bed because he's had to settle our costs, and he's no further forward than he was when we started. And I'll tell you the story again, really just to hammer home the importance of common sense and relationships in business. And anytime anything gets legal, you know, anytime anything gets contentious, you know, it's obviously a cliche, it's an old adage, but you know, but normally the lawyers are the only winners in that case. In this particular case, the barristers, I mean, my God, can those barristers fucking charge? It's eye-wateringly piss-taking what they actually charge. You know, it was a situation that could have been dealt with sensibly, you know, man to man. So again, anytime you've got a dispute, anytime you receive a legal letter, anytime you want to send a legal letter yourself, just really think, is that really the best way to deal with it? Because I rarely know any situation that can't be better solved with two sensible people sitting down and being unemotional and pragmatic about it. And by being pragmatic, what I mean by that is you might not both get exactly the outcome you want, but it could possibly be a damn sight better than the outcome both of you will be given if you have to go to court. Because again, you know, so many times, you know, you may win, but it will be a Pyrrhic victory. You know, the person on the other side may not have the money to pay you anyway, or you may have legal fees that are not recoverable, etc., etc. And there's so many things that you know, that just make protracted legal battles, not even protracted legal battles, that make any kind of legal action whatsoever just so counter everything. So really have a think about that. What else is on here? Instagram and turning Instagram leads into sales. So over the last couple of weeks, spent quite a lot of time talking to my social media guys, as in my internal social media team and marketing team, who work on our luxury fashion brands, which is Accent and Laurizia, and particularly Accent here. And one of the things I've been trying to hammer home to the guys is any kind of social media, but particularly Instagram, it's so much more than just posting content to get likes and follows and comments. And yes, it is probably highly likely that the more likes and comments and follows you get, ultimately that will turn into business in some way, shape or form. But as you know, we talk about a lot on some of our videos, you know, it's very much about quality over quantity. And you could have a business or an Instagram account with 500 followers that are very loyal, engaged, active followers that are more beneficial to that business owner than someone who's got 500,000 followers who are not engaged and don't really care about the product and the brand. So what I've been really trying to hammer home to my guys is when we're doing posts, what can we do so we can actually find out the people who are engaging with these posts, what their views are, and then how can we then contact them and talk to them accordingly. So as an example, like I said, we're talking luxury fashion here. Rather than just posting a picture of, let's say, a red shoe and a blue shoe, why not turn that into an Instagram poll? Show the red shoe and the blue shoe next to each other with the poll of which do you prefer. People will then see it and click on either the red shoe or the blue shoe. And you, as the account owner, can look behind the scenes and see the metrics to see exactly which people said they liked the red shoe and which people said they liked the blue shoe. You've then got the information to be able to outreach those people, send them a DM, drop them a message, specifically tailored to what it was they liked. So all of the people who liked the red shoe, send them a message, talking, engaging with them, talking about that red shoe, offering them a discount code or inviting them into the shop, or doing whatever is relevant. The people who liked the blue shoe, contact them again, specifically tailored to them. What you're then doing is you're taking a post and turning that post into very specific, almost like qualified leads. And you don't need big numbers of people to start to get some good success from this. If you do a post that would, let's say, typically get 300 or 400 views on your story, those 300 or 400 views are of limited value to you. But if you can turn those 300 or 400 views into 30 or 40 people engaging with a poll, and you can then contact those 30 or 40 people with an offer specific to them, all of a sudden you can turn Instagram into a fantastic lead generator and a fantastic money-making tool. And you can apply this to, you can apply these poll/competition type things to whatever your business is, and you can just tweak the text, tweak the copy, or tweak the logic accordingly. If you're thinking about bringing a new product out there, why not use some questions or a poll to ask people what product it is they want. Not only is that going to give you some insights as to what you could be bringing into your business, but you also specifically know your audience to then use them as hot leads and go out and market to them as and when you're ready. So very, very, very simple. All of these things are simple. I honestly don't think I've ever talked about a complicated concept. They're just simple, that need applying. And that's it. You can tweak this to any of your businesses. What else is on here that we can talk about today? Pitching people when it's right to pitch them. So I get a lot of messages from people who want to access my let's say address book of high net worths, of celebrities, of whatever it may be. And these people invariably outreach to me and say, look, something along the lines of, I sell a luxury product, or I work in the high net worth arena, whether that's investment banking or foreign exchange or whatever it may be, and your contacts and your friends will be perfect for me. Please can you introduce me, and we'll do a commission split. They're the kind of messages, or they're the kind of pictures I get from people. And I will always say, well, I'm not always going to say no. First of all, I'll make sure it's a product that's relevant to me. But I'll always tell these people that I will only even contemplate pitching them to what I believe is the right person at the right time. Because I cannot tell you how easy it is to burn your relationships by hammering them with shit that they're not interested in, and effectively turn yourself from being a friend or an acquaintance to just looking like an absolute sap. And it's a mistake far too many people make. Now, my network of friends, of acquaintances, of investors, of contacts, they're effectively grouped into people that I do business with, people that I may do business with, people that I'll never do business with. And even though on the face of it, to some of you guys, I may have a friend who looks like the perfect person, to do business with, because they're in a particular area, or they're in a particular wealth bracket, I can tell you exactly, because I know that person inside out, that they will never buy a certain thing, or they will never do business in a certain way, whether that's high risk, low risk, whatever. And because I know that, there's no point me pushing something and damaging a relationship. So, like I said, when these people contact me and want to interact with my database, I'm only ever going to vouch for someone if I believe in the product and if I feel that it's the right time for that person. And I'm sure for many of you guys watching and listening to this, that is a mistake that you'll make time and time again. hammering a dead lead, you know, trying to force someone to buy something that they don't want to buy, or to do something that they don't want to do. And not only do you waste your time, you know, you end up burning a relationship that could be good for you for something else. And like I say, you know, my relationships fit into many categories, from friends to possible business associates to very close business relationships. And you know, quite sometimes people will move from one category to another, and sometimes people will never ever move into a different category, and I know they won't. I'm never going to push it, and I'm going to enjoy them for what they are, you know, a great friend or someone to have fun with. And I'm not going to give a shit that I can't do any business with them, or I can't get them to invest or whatever, because you know, ultimately life is about having fun and doing the right things with the right people, not trying to sell something to someone who doesn't want to buy it. So that is a little simple again but important lesson of the day. What have I got on here? I've got on here, be a listener. That's probably, you know, when I do these roundups all through the week, I make little notes to myself of things that have happened to me that I can talk about later in the week. And I've just written on here, be a listener. I can't specifically remember why, but it's probably because I have been sat with waffling idiots over the last couple of weeks who never ever stop fucking talking. I'm probably talking about themselves. And I, you know, one simple piece of advice to learn more, to put yourself in a better position in a negotiation, or to understand how you may be able to get what you want from a particular situation or from a particular person, is to stop talking, just shut the fuck up and listen to what the person's saying. And again, it's, you know, an old expression that, you know, we've got two ears and one mouth, and they should be used in that proportion. But I honestly spend, you know, unless I'm actually giving a speech, pitching an investment or pitching an opportunity, you know, obviously a lot of people probably see me as a chatty socialite or whatever, but I guarantee you I spend so much more time listening and taking in the situation than I actually do talking. You know, like I said, unless I'm holding court, telling a joke, telling a story, you know, trying to be the center of attention for a particular reason, you know, I want to take everything in. I want to listen to people. I want to see what's going on. So that is another simple but big piece of advice. You guys always ask me for crypto advice, crypto tips, which I never specifically give, other than happily tell you that I am a constant acquirer of Bitcoin and Ethereum. This week again, you know, I've been topping up on Bitcoin, topped up a little bit of Ethereum. But I think when one of the things I talk about is the future use cases for crypto, for decentralized networks, and for anyone who's been paying attention to the news over the last week or two, and the obviously very unfortunate crisis that's going on in Afghanistan, you may or may not know that Western Union has called it a day. I don't know if it was permanently called it a day, but certainly called it a day for now, operating in Afghanistan. And I mean, obviously, this couldn't come at a worse time for these people. I mean, you know, when there isn't a war or an international crisis going on, you know, these kind of countries survive on international transfers from the likes of Western Union. So it would be bad enough not having that at the best of times, but to not have it now and to be effectively completely marooned is absolutely catastrophic. But the reason I mention it is because, see, what you've got with Western Union, yes, they've got this fantastic international network where you know, it's possible to send money from one place to another place very quickly, but it's subject to two things: one, massive fees, and B, ultimately it is a centralized network that is controlled by a particular person or a particular, you know, board of directors or group. And you've therefore got the ability for Western Union to make that unilateral decision that we will no longer support Afghanistan, and effectively, you know, cut off that country in a heartbeat. What you can, what you will never get with the likes of Bitcoin and, you know, true decentralized crypto networks is the ability for any one person to make a wholesale decision on behalf of other people. So, you know, looking at the Bitcoin network, it is impossible for anyone to turn around and say, right, we will isolate Afghanistan from Bitcoin. You know, we will cut this particular section of people off from being able to transact on our network. And yeah, I try and talk in simple terms when I talk about my belief for the future of Bitcoin, for the future of crypto. And one of the main reasons I believe there is an enormous future in these coins, in these platforms, in these networks, is because of the growing distrust in governments and in centralized networks. And you know, and when you see these world events where something as simple as, you know, cutting off Afghanistan from Western Union, or, you know, the US or the UK or any other government issuing insane amounts of money through, you know, through quantitative easing, these events just continue to hammer the lack of trust that people have in these centralized organizations, these centralized governments, these centralized banks. And that is why, for me, the future is very much in crypto, in decentralized networks, and that's why I am putting a large portion of my liquid net worth in it. And like I said, that's not me campaigning for any one particular coin. It's just me believing the logic factor of the future of a decentralized network. What else? Anything else to talk about on here? We've talked about a guy leaving. One of our accountants has handed his notice in. And for those of you that listen to these regularly, you'll know that hammer on that I spend the vast portion of my time in recruitment. And one of the particular roles that we're heavily recruiting for at the minute is accountants and accountancy. We're probably four or five accountants light in our umbrella accountancy department. So if you're an accountant and you're watching this, or rather if you're a good accountant or a good bookkeeper, or you know a good accountant or a good bookkeeper, I want to hear from you. But what I was telling you is that one of our guys handed his notice in. I mean, it couldn't have come at a worse time, because he's quite a good lad, this guy. He's certainly settled in. And you know, we're short three or four people anyway, so we're now short four or five people. And when he gave his notice in, I made, you know, so it was probably a knee-jerk reaction, but I think it was good and bad for two reasons. This guy has moved to another role, wants to move to another role, because he's going to be able to work from home for a couple of days a week, and he also is going to be moving for another $4,000 or $5,000. Now, I took the view that to lose somebody else in this, in a short space of time before we've even recruited anyone else, would be quite disastrous to the department. So I actually contacted this guy to offer him the chance to effectively match his new role. So give him a $4,000 or $5,000 pay rise, because my view was, well, if I have to re-recruit him, then it's going to cost me probably $4,000 or $5,000 in recruitment fees. So I may as well give the money to him, because it's going to cost me one way or the other. And also, as much as I'm not a fan from the work from home, again, you know, we know this guy now, we semi-trust him. So if he has to work from home for a couple of days a week, then so be it. On the day that we offered him this, I felt it was the right, you know, I felt it was the right thing to do, because, like I say, I didn't want any more disruption to an already under-resourced department. Luck would have it, he didn't accept the offer. He decided he'd already made his mind up and he was going to go to this other place. But I then woke up the next day and thought, you know what, whilst I kind of still stand by, I would have stood by my decision and honoured it because I didn't want to lose that person. In hindsight, it was probably for the best that he didn't accept it, because I would have then made a run for my own back by having a mispricing in of people in that department, and also starting to create that precedent of people working from home regularly, which again, any regular viewers of this will know I'm not a fan of. So yeah, I don't particularly know what the lesson is from that, but I just wanted to wanted to share the story with you, and let you know. You know, I guess that for me the lesson is just to, you know, always try and there's always a solution. You know, as much as something sounds like a disaster at the time, there's always a solution. It may not always be the best solution, and like I said, that particular situation, in hindsight, it was probably best that he didn't go with my solution, because it would have made a rod for my own back. But I think, you know, moaning about any situation is never going to solve it. You know, what can you do to think outside the box to create something that is mutually acceptable to you both? And that's it for me, guys. That is it. It's 8:10. I was due in my taxi 10 minutes ago, so I better throw my jeans on and get out of here. Sunday the 29th of August, the next time we're doing one of these, it will be Sunday the 5th of September from the UK. So have a great week, everybody. As always, if you like this, please press like on YouTube, or subscribe to your channel if you're listening to it on iTunes, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please make sure you leave me a review, tell a friend, add me on Instagram. I'm the Matt Haycox, TheMattHaycox on pretty much all social channels. So find me, leave me a comment, tell me what you've been up to in your week, and maybe tell me some of your problems, and I will see if I can find a solution for them when we talk again next week. So until September, have a great week, everybody, and I hope that wasn't too rocky for you on the sea squirter. See you later. Bye bye.